Sci-Fi Audio presents Prince of Thorns, Book 1 of The Broken Empire by Mark Lawrence, narrated by James Clamp and directed by Shane O'Connell.
Chapter 1. Ravens. Always the ravens. They settled on the gables of the church even before the injured became the dead. Even before Reich had finished taking fingers from hands and rings from fingers. I leaned back against the gallows post and nodded to the birds, a dozen of them in a black line, wise-eyed and watching. The town square ran red. Blood in the gutters, blood on the flagstones, blood in the fountain. The corpses posed as corpses do, some comical, reaching for the sky with missing fingers, some peaceful, coiled about their wounds. Flies rose above the wounded as they struggled. This way and that, some blind, some sly, all betrayed by their buzzing entourage. Water, water. It's always water with the dying. Strange. It's killing that gives me a thirst. And that was Mabberton. 200 dead farmers lying with their scythes and axes. You know, I warn them that we do this for a living. I said it to their leader, Bovid Tor. I gave them that chance. I always do. But no. They wanted blood and slaughter. And they got it. War, my friends, is a thing of beauty. Those as says otherwise are losing. If I'd bothered to go over to old Bovid, propped up against the fountain with his guts in his lap, he'd probably take a contrary view. But look where disagreeing got him.
Shit, poor farm maggots.
Reich discarded a handful of fingers over Bovid's open belly. He came to me, holding out his takings, as if it was my fault.
Look, one gold ring, one, a whole village and one fucking gold ring. I'd like to set the bastards up and knock 'em down again, fucking bog farmers.
He would too. He was an evil bastard, and greedy with it. I held his eye. Settle down, Brother Reich. There's more than one kind of gold in Mabberton. I gave him my warning look. His cursing stole the magic from the scene. Besides, I had to be stern with him. Reich was always on the edge after a battle, wanting more. I gave him a look that told him I had more. More than he could handle. He grumbled, stowed his bloody ring, and thrust his knife back in his belt. Makin came up then, and flung an arm about each of us, clapping gauntlet to shoulder plate. If Makin had a skill, then smoothing things over was it. Brother Jorg is right, little Reiki. There's treasure aplenty to be found. He was wont to call Reich little Reiki, on account of him being a head taller than any of us, and twice as wide. Makin always told jokes. He'd tell them to those as he killed, if they gave him time. Like to see them go out with a smile.
What treasure?
Reich wanted to know, still surly. When you get farmers, what else do you always get, little Reiki? Makin raised his eyebrows, all suggestive. Reich lifted his visor, treating us to his ugly face. Well, brutal more than ugly. I think the scars improved him.
Cows?
Makin pursed his lips. I never liked his lips, too thick and fleshy. But I forgave him that, for his joking and his deathly work with that flail of his.
Well, you can have the cows, little Reiki. Me? I'm going to find a farmer's daughter or three. Before the others use them all up.
They went off then, Reich doing that laugh of his,
huh, huh, huh,
as if he was trying to cough a fishbone out. I watched them force the door to Bovid's place opposite the church, a fine house, high-roofed with wooden slates, and a little flower garden in front. Bovid followed them with his eyes, but he couldn't turn his head. I looked at the ravens. I watched Gempt and his half-wit brother Michael taking heads. Michael with the cart and Gempt with the axe. A thing of beauty, I tell you. At least to look at. I'll agree war smells bad, but we'd torch the place soon enough, and the stink would all turn to wood smoke. Gold rings? I needed no more payment.
Boy!
Bovid called out, his voice all hollow-like and weak. I went to stand before him, leaning on my sword, tired in my arms and legs all of a sudden.
Best speak your peace quickly, farmer. Brother Gents are coming with his axe. Chop, chop.
He didn't seem too worried. It's hard to worry a man so close to the worm feast. Still, it irked me that he held me so lightly and called me boy.
Do you have daughters, farmer?
Hiding in the cellar, maybe? Old Reich will sniff them out.
Bovid looked up sharp at that, pained and sharp.
How old are you, boy?
Again, the boy.
Old enough to slit you open like a fat purse,
I said, getting angry now. I don't like to get angry. It makes me angry. I don't think he caught even that. I don't think he even knew it was me that opened him up not half an hour before.
15 summers, no more. Couldn't be more.
His words came slow, from blue lips in a white face. Out by 2, I would have told him, but he'd gone past hearing. The cart creaked up behind me, and Gempt came along with his axe dripping.
Take his head, I told them. Leave his fat belly for the ravens.
15. I'd hardly be 15 and rousting villages. By the time 15 came round, I'd be king. Some people are born to rub you the wrong way. Brother Gempt was born to rub the world the wrong way. Chapter 2. Mabberton burned well. All the villages burned well that summer. Machin called it a hot bastard of a summer. Too mean to give out rain. And he wasn't wrong. Dust rose behind us when we rode in. Smoke when we rode out.
Who'd be a farmer?
Machin liked to ask questions.
Who'd be a farmer's daughter?
I nodded toward Reich, rolling in his saddle, almost tired enough to fall out, wearing a stupid grin and a bolt of samite cloth over his half-plate. Where he found samite in Mabberton, I never did get to know.
Brother Reich does enjoy his simple pleasures,
Machin said. He did. Reich had a hunger for it. Hungry like the fire. The flames fair ate up Mabberton. I put the torch to the thatched inn, and the fire chased us out. Just one more bloody day in the years-long death throes of our broken empire. Machin wiped at his sweat, smearing himself all over with soot stripes. He had a talent for getting dirty, did Machin.
You weren't above those simple pleasures yourself, Brother Jorg.
I couldn't argue there.
How old are you?
That fat farmer had wanted to know.
Old enough to pay a call on his daughters.
The fat girl had a lot to say, just like her father. Screeched like a barn owl. Hurt my ears with it. I liked the older one better. She was quiet enough. So quiet. You'd give a twist here or there just to check she hadn't died of fright. Though I don't suppose either of them was quiet when the fire reached them. Gempt rode up and spoiled my imaginings.
The Baron's men will see that smoke from 10 miles. You shouldn't have burned it.
He shook his head, his stupid mane of ginger hair bobbing this way and that.
Shouldn't I?
His idiot brother joined in, calling from the old grey. We let him ride the old grey with the cart hitched up. The grey wouldn't leave the road. That horse was cleverer than Michael.
Gemt always wanted to point stuff out. You shouldn't have put them bodies down the well. We'll go thirsty now. You shouldn't have killed that priest. We'll have bad luck now. If we'd gone easy on her, we'd have a ransom from Baron Kennick.
I just ached to put my knife through his throat. Right then. Just to lean out and plant it in his neck.
What's that? What say you, Brother Gemt? Bubble, bubble? Shouldn't have stabbed your bulgy old Adam's apple.
Oh, no! I cried, all shocked-like.
Quick, little Reiki! Go piss on Mabberton! Got to put that fire out! Baron's men will see it, said Gemt, stubborn and red-faced.
He went red as a beet if you crossed him. That red face just made me want to kill him even more. I didn't, though. You got responsibilities when you're a leader. You got a responsibility not to kill too many of your men.
Or who are you going to lead?
The column bunched up around us, the way it always did when something was up. I pulled on Garrod's reins, and he stopped with a snicker and a stamp. I watched Gemt and waited. Waited until all 38 of my brothers gathered round. And Gemt got so red, you'd think his ears would bleed.
Where are we all going, my brothers?
I asked, and I stood in my stirrups, so I could look out over their ugly faces. I asked it in my quiet voice, and they all hushed to hear.
Where?
I asked again.
Surely it isn't just me that knows.
Do I keep secrets from you, my brothers? Wright looked a bit confused at this, furrowing his brow. Fat Burlow came up on my right. On my left, the Nuban with his teeth so white in that soot-black face. Silence.
Brother Gemt can tell us. He knows what should be and what is.
I smiled, though my hand still ached with wanting my dagger in his neck.
Where are we going, Brother Gemt? Wenneth on the Horse Coast, he said,
all reluctant, not wanting to agree to anything.
Well and good. How are we going to get there?
Near 40 of us on our fine, oh-so-stolen horses. Gemt set his jaw. He could see where I was going.
How are we going to get there? If we want us a slice of the pie while it's still nice and hot, I asked. Lich Road,
Wright called out, all pleased that he knew the answer.
Lich Road,
I repeated, still quiet and smiling.
What other way could we go?
I looked at the Nuban, holding his dark eyes. I couldn't read him, but I let him read me.
Ain't no other way.
Reich's on a roll, I thought. He don't know what game's being played, but he likes his part.
Do the Baron's men know where we're going?
I asked Fat Burlow.
War dogs follow the front, he said.
Fat Burlow ain't stupid. His jowls quiver when he speaks, but he ain't stupid.
So,
I looked around them, real slow-like.
So the Baron knows where bandits such as ourselves will be going, and he knows the way we've got to go.
I let that sink in.
And I just lit a bloody big fire that tells him and his what a bad idea it'd be to follow.
I stuck Gemt with my knife then. I didn't need to, but I wanted it. He danced pretty enough too, bubble bubble on his blood, and fell off his horse. His red face went pale quick enough.
Michael, I said, take his head.
And he did. Gemt just chose a bad moment. Whatever broke Brother Michael left the outside untouched. He looked as solid and as tough and as sour as the rest of them. Until you asked him a question.
Chapter 3 Two dead, two wrigglers.
Makin wore that big grin of his. We'd have camped by the gibbet in any case, but Makin had ridden on ahead to check the ground. I thought the news that two of the four gibbet cases held live prisoners would cheer the brothers.
Two,
Wright grumbled. He'd tired himself out, and a tired little Reiki always sees a gibbet as half empty.
Two!
The Nuban hollered down the line. I could see some of the lads exchanging coin on their bets. The Lich Road is as boring as a Sunday sermon. It runs straight and level. So straight, it gets so as you'd kill for a left turn or a right turn. So level, you'd cheer a slope. And on every side, marsh, midges, midges, and more marsh. On the Lich Road, it didn't get any better than two caged wrigglers on a gibbet. Strange that I didn't think to question what business a gibbet had standing out there in the middle of nowhere. I took it as a bounty. Somebody had left their prisoners to die, dangling in cages at the roadside. A strange spot to choose, but free entertainment for my little band nonetheless. The brothers were eager, so I nudged Jared into a trot. A good horse, Jared. He shook off his weariness and clattered along. There's no road like the Lich Road for clattering along.
Wrigglers!
Wright gave a shout, and they were all racing to catch up. I let Jared have his head. He wouldn't let any horse get past him. Not on this road. Not with every yard of it paved, every flagstone fitting with the next, so close a blade of grass couldn't hope for the light. Not a stone turned, not a stone worn. Built on a bog, mind you. I beat them to the wrigglers, of course. None of them could touch Jared. Certainly not with me on his back, and them all half as heavy again. At the gibbet, I turned to look back at them. Strung out along the road. I yelled out wild with the joy of it, loud enough to wake the head cart. Gempt would be in there, bouncing around at the back. Makin reached me first, even though he'd rode the distance twice before. Let the Baron's men come, I told him. The Lich Road is as good as any bridge. 10 men could hold an army here. Them that wants to flank us can drown in the bog. Makin nodded, still hunting his breath. The ones who built this road, if they'd make me a castle. Thunder in the east cut across my words. If the roadmen built castles, we'd never get in anywhere, Makin said. Be happy they're gone. We watched the brothers come in. The sunset turned the marsh pools to orange fire, and I thought of Mabberton. A good day, Brother Makin, I said. Indeed, Brother Jorg, he said. So the brothers came and set to arguing over the wrigglers. I went and sat against the loot cart to read while the light stayed with us and the rain held off. The day left me in mind to read Plutarch. I had him all to myself, sandwiched between leather covers. Some worthy monk spent a lifetime on that book, a lifetime hunched over it, brush in hand. Here the gold for halo, sun, and scrollwork. Here a blue like poison, bluer than a noon sky. Tiny vermilion dots to make a bed of flowers. Probably went blind over it, that monk. Probably poured his life in here, from young lad to greyhead, prettying up old Plutarch's words. The thunder rolled, the wrigglers wriggled and howled, and I sat reading words that were older than old, before the roadmen built their roads.
You cowards! Women with your swords and axes!
One of the crow feasts on the gibbet had a mouth on him.
Not a man amongst you, old pederasts! Trailing up here after that little boy.
He curled his words up at the end like a mercy man.
There's a fella over here got an opinion about you, Brother Jorg.
Makin called out. A drop of rain hit my nose. I closed the cover on Plutarch. He'd waited a while to tell me about Sparta and Lycurgus. He could wait some more and not get wet doing it. The wriggler had more to say, and I let him tell it to my back. On the road, you've got to wrap a book well to keep the rain out. 10 turns of oilcloth, 10 more turns the other way. Then stash it under a cloak in a saddlebag. A good saddlebag, mind. None of that junk from the Thurtons. Good double-stitched leather from the Horse Coast. The lads parted to let me up close. The gibbet stank worse than the headcart. A crude thing of fresh-cut timber. Four cages hung there. Two held dead men. Very dead men. Legs dangling through the bars. Raven pecked to the bone. Flies thick about them. Like a second skin, black and buzzing. The lads had taken a few pokes at one of the wrigglers, and he didn't look too cheerful for it. In fact, he looked as if he'd pegged it. Which was a waste, as we had a whole night ahead of us, and I'd have said as much, but for the wriggler with the mouth. So now the boy comes over. He's finished looking for lewd pictures in his stolen book. He sat crouched up in his cage, his feet all bleeding and raw. An old man, maybe 40, all black hair and grey beard and dark eyes glittering. Take the pages to wipe your dung, boy, he said fierce-like, grabbing the bars all of a sudden, making the cage swing. It's the only use you'll get from it.
We could set a slow fire, Reich said.
Even Reich knew the old man just wanted us angry, so we'd finish him quick.
Like we did at the Thurston gibbets.
A few chuckles went up at that. Not from Makin, though. He had a frown on him under his dirt and soot, staring at the wriggler. I held up a hand to quieten them down.
It'd be a shameful waste of such a fine book, Father Gomst, I said.
Like Makin, I'd recognised Gomst through all that beard and hair. Without that accent, though, he'd have got roasted.
Especially on Lycurgus, written in High Latin, not that pidgin Romano they teach in church.
You know me?
He asked in a cracked voice, weepy all of a sudden.
Of course I do.
I pushed both hands through my lovely locks and set my hair back so he could see me proper in the gloom. I have the sharp, dark looks of the Ancrass.
Your father Gomst. Come to take me back to school.
Print.
He was blubbing now, unable to get his words out. Disgusting, really. Made me feel as if I'd bitten something rotten.
Prince Honorus Jorg Ancrath, at your service.
I did my court bow.
What became of Captain Bortha?
Father Gomp swung gently in his cage, all confused.
Captain Bortha, sir.
Makin snapped a salute and stepped up. He had blood on him from the first wriggler. We had us a deathly silence then. Even the chirp and whir of the marsh hushed down to a whisper. The brothers looked from me, back to the old priest, and back to me, mouths hanging open. Little Reiki couldn't have looked more surprised if you'd asked him 9 times 6. The rain chose that moment to fall. All at once, as if the Lord Almighty had emptied his chamber pot over us. The gloom that had been gathering set thick as treacle.
Prince Jorg,
Father Gomst had to shout over the rain.
The knight! You've got to run!
He held the bars of his cage, white-knuckled, wide eyes unblinking in the downpour, staring into the darkness. And through the night, through the rain, over the marsh where no man could walk, we saw them coming. We saw their lights, pale lights such as the dead burn in deep pools where men aren't meant to look. Lights that had promised whatever a man could want and would set you chasing them, hunting answers, and finding only cold mud, deep and hungry. I never liked Father Gomst. He'd been telling me what to do since I was 6, most often with the back of his hand as the reason.
Run, Prince Jorg, run!
Old Gomsty howled. So I stood my ground. Brother Gaines wasn't the cook because he was good at cooking. He was just bad at everything else. Chapter 4. The dead came on through the rain, the ghosts of the bog dead, of the drowned, and of men whose corpses were given to the mire. I saw Red Kent run blind and flounder in the marsh. A few of the brothers had the sense to take the road when they ran. Most ended in the mire. Father Gomp started praying in his cage, shouting out the words like a shield.
Father, who art in heaven, protect thy son. Father, who art in heaven.
Faster and faster as the fear got into him. The first of them came up over the sucking pool and onto the lichway. He had a glow about him like moonlight, something that you knew would never warm you. You could see his body limed in the light, with the rain racing through him and bouncing on the road. Nobody stood with me. The Nuban ran, eyes wide in a dark face, Fat Burlo looking as if the blood was let from him. Reich screaming like a child, even Macon with a horror on him. I held my arms wide to the rain. I could feel it beat on me. I didn't have so many years under my belt, but even to me the rain fell like memory. It woke wild nights in me when I stood on the keep tower, on the edge above a high fall, near drowned in the deluge, and daring the lightning to touch me.
Oh, Father, who art in heaven! Father, who art!
Gomp started to gabble when the lich came close. It burned with a cold fire, and you could feel it licking at your bones. I kept my arms wide and my face to the rain.
My father isn't in heaven, Gompsty, I said. He's in his castle, counting out his men.
The dead thing closed on me, and I looked in its eyes. Hollow they were.
What have you got?
I said, and it showed me, and I showed it. There's a reason I'm going to win this war. Everyone alive has been fighting a battle that grew old before they were born. I cut my teeth on the wooden soldiers in my father's war room. There's a reason I'm going to win where they failed. It's because I understand the game.
Hell, the dead man said. I've got hell.
And he flowed into me, cold as dying, edged like a razor. I felt my mouth curl in a smile. I heard my laughing over the rain. A knife is a scary thing, right enough, held to your throat, sharp and cool. The fire, too, and the rag, and an old ghost on the lichway. All of them might give you pause, until you realize what they are. They're just ways to lose the game. You lose the game, and what have you lost? You've lost the game. That's the secret. And it amazes me that it's mine and mine alone. I saw the game for what it was the night when Count Reynard's men caught our carriage. There was a storm that night, too. I remember the din of rain on the carriage roof and the thunder beneath it. Big Yan had fair hauled the door off its hinges to get us out. He only had time for me, though. He threw me clear into a briar patch so thick that the Count's men persuaded themselves I'd run into the night. They didn't want to search it. But I hadn't run. I'd hung there in the thorns. And I saw them kill Big Yan. I saw it in the frozen moments the lightning gave me. I saw what they did to Mother, and how long it took. They broke little William's head against a milestone. Golden curls and blood. And I'll admit that William was the first of my brothers. And he did have his hooks in me, with his chubby hands and laughing. Since then, I've taken on many a brother, and evil ones at that. So I'd not miss one or three. But at the time, it did hurt to see little William broken like that, like a toy, like something worthless. When they killed him, Mother wouldn't hold her peace. So they slit her throat. I was stupid then, being only 9, and I fought to save them both. But the thorns held me tight. I've learned to appreciate thorns since. The thorns taught me the game. They let me understand what all those grim and serious men who fought the 100 War have yet to learn. You can only win the game when you understand that it is a game. Let a man play chess and tell him that every pawn is his friend. Let him think both bishops holy. Let him remember happy days in the shadows of his castles. Let him love his queen Watch him lose them all.
What have you got for me, dead thing?
I asked. It's a game. I will play my pieces. I felt him cold inside me. I saw his death, I saw his despair, and his hunger. And I gave it back. I'd expected more. But he was only dead. I showed him the empty time where my memory won't go. I let him look there. He ran from me then. He ran and I chased him. But only to the edge of the marsh. Because it's a game. And I'm going to win. Chapter 5. 4 years earlier. For the longest time, I studied revenge to the exclusion of all else. I built my first torture chamber in the dark vaults of imagination. Lying on bloody sheets in the healing hall, I discovered doors within my mind that I'd not found before. Doors that even a child of 9 knows should not be opened. Doors that never close again. I threw them wide. Sir Riley found me, hanging within the hookbriar, not 10 yards from the smoking ruin of the carriage. They almost missed me. I saw them reach the bodies on the road. I watched them through the briar, silver glimpses of Sir Riley's armour, and flashes of red from the tabards of Ancrith foot soldiers. Mother was easy to find, in her silks.
Sweet Jesus! It's the Queen!
Sir Riley had them turn her over.
Gently! Show some respect!
He broke off with a gasp. The Count's men hadn't left her pretty.
Sir! Big Yan's over here. Grem and Jassa too.
I saw them heave Yan over and turn to the other guardsmen.
They'd better be dead,
Sir Riley spat.
Look for the princes!
I didn't see them find Will, but I knew they had by the silence that spread across the men. I let my chin fall back to my chest and watched the dark patterning of blood on the dry leaves around my feet.
Ah, hell!
One of the men spoke at last.
Get him on a horse! Easy with him!
Sir Riley said. A crack ran through his voice.
And find the heir!
With more vigour, but no hope. I tried to call to them, but the strength had run from me. I couldn't even lift my head.
He's not here, Sir Riley.
They've taken him as a hostage,
Sir Riley said. He had part of it right. Something held me against my will.
Set him by the Queen. Gentle, gentle with him.
Secure them,
Sir Riley said.
We ride hard for the tall castle.
Part of me wanted to let them go. I felt no pain anymore, just a dull ache. And even that was fading. A peace folded me with the promise of forgetting.
Sir!
A shout went up from one of the men. I heard the clank of armour as Sir Riley strode across to see.
Piece of shield?
He asked.
Found it in the mud. The carriage wheel must have pushed it under.
The soldier paused. I heard scraping.
Looks like a black wing to me.
A crow. A crow on a red field.
It's Count Reynard's colours,
Riley said. Count Reynard. I had a name. A black crow on a red field. The insignia flashed across my eyes, seared deep by the lightning of last night's storm. A fire lit within me, and the pain from 100 hooks burned in every limb. A groan escaped me. My lips parted, dry skin tearing. And Riley found me.
There's something here!
I heard him curse as the hookbriar found every chink in his armour.
Quickly now! Pull this stuff apart!
dead.
I heard the whisper from behind Sir Riley as he cut me free.
He's so white.
I guess the briar near bled me dry. So they fetched a cart and took me back. I didn't sleep. I watched the sky turn black, and I thought. In the healing hall, Friar Glenn and his helper Inch dug the hooks from my flesh. My tutor, Lundist, arrived while they had me on the table with their knives out. He had a book with him, the size of a Teuton shield, and three times as heavy by the look of it. Lundist had more strength in that wizened old stick of a body than anyone guessed.
"Those are fire-cleaned knives, I hope, Friar?"
Lundist carried the accent of his homelands in the utter east, and a tendency to leave half of a word unspoken, as if an intelligent listener should be able to fill in the blanks.
"It is purity of spirit that will keep corruption from the flesh, tutor,"
Friar Glenn said. He spared Lundist a disapproving glance and returned to his digging.
"Even so, clean the knives, Friar. Holy office will prove scant protection from the king's ire if the prince dies in your halls."
Lundist set his book down on the table beside me, rattling a tray of vials at the far end. He lifted the cover and turned to a marked page.
"The thorns of the hookbriar are like to find the bone."
He traced a wrinkled yellow finger down the lines.
"The points can break off and sour the wound."
Friar Glenn gave a sharp jab at that, which made me cry out. He set his knife down and turned to face Lundist. I could see only the friar's back, the brown cloth straining over his shoulders, dark with sweat over his spine.
"Tutor Lundist," he said, "a man in your profession is wont to think all things may be learned from the pages of a book, or the right scroll. Learning has its place, sirrah. But do not think to lecture me on healing on the basis of an evening spent with an old tome."
Well, Friar Glenn won that argument. The sergeant-at-arms had to help Tutor Lundist from the hall. I guess even at 9, I had a serious lack of spiritual purity. For my wounds soured within 2 days, and for 9 weeks I lay in fever, chasing dark dreams along death's borderlands. They tell me I raged and howled, that I raved as the pus oozed from slices where the briar had held me. I remember the stink of corruption. It had a kind of sweetness to it, a sweetness that'd make you want to hurl. Inch, the friar's aide, grew tired of holding me down, though he had the arms of a lumberjack. In the end, they tied me to my bed. I learned from Tutor Lundist that the friar would not attend me after the first week. Friar Glenn said a devil was in me. How else could a child speak such horror? In the 4th week, I slipped the bonds that held me to my pallet and set a fire in the hall. I have no memory of the escape or my capture in the woods. When they cleared the ruin, they found the remains of Inch, with the poker from the hearth lodged in his chest. Many times I stood at the door. I had seen my mother and brother thrown through that doorway, torn and broken. And in dreams, my feet would take me to stand there time and again. I lacked the courage to follow them, held on the barbs and hooks of cowardice. Sometimes I saw the deadlands across a black river, sometimes across a chasm spanned by a narrow bridge of stone. Once I saw the door in the guise of the portals to my father's throne room, but edged with frost and weeping pus from every join. I had but to set my hand upon the handle. The Count of Raynor kept me alive. The promise of his pain crushed my own under its heel. Hate will keep you alive where love fails. And then one day my fever left me. My wounds remained angry and red, but they closed. They fed me chicken in soup, and my strength crept back. A stranger to me. The spring came to paint the leaves back upon the trees. I had my strength, but I felt something else had been taken. Taken so completely, I could no longer name it. The sun returned, and much to Friar Glenn's distaste, Lundist returned to instruct me once more. The first time he came, I sat abed. I watched him set out his books upon the table. Your father will see you on his return from Geleth, Lundist said. His voice held a note of reproach, but not for me. The death of the Queen and Prince William weigh heavy on him. When the pain eases, he will surely come to speak with you. I didn't understand why Lundis should feel the need to lie. I knew my father would not waste time on me whilst it seemed I would die. I knew he would see me when seeing me served some end. Tell me, tutor, I said. Is revenge a science or an art? Chapter 6. The rain faltered when the spirits fled. I'd only broken the one, but the others ran too, back to whatever pools they haunted. Maybe my one had been their leader. Maybe men become cowards in death. I don't know. As to my own cowards, they had nowhere to flee, and I found them easily enough. I found Makin first. He, at least, was headed back toward me. So you found a pair, then? I called to him. He paused a moment and looked at me. The rain didn't fall so heavy now, but he still looked like a drowned rat. The water ran in rivulets over his breastplate, in and out of the dents. He checked the marsh to either side, still nervy, and lowered his sword. A man who's got no fear is missing a friend, Jorg, he said. And a smile found its way onto those thick lips of his. Running ain't no bad thing. Leastways, if you run in the right direction. He waved a hand toward where Reich wrestled with a clump of bulrushes, the mud up to his chest already. Fear helps a man pick his fights. You're fighting them all, my prince. And he bowed, there on the lichway, with the rain dripping off him. I spared a glance for Reich. Michael had similar problems in a pool to the other side of the road, only he'd got his problems up to the neck. I'm going to fight them all in the end, I said to him. Pick your fights, Makin said. I'll pick my ground, I said. I'll pick my ground, but I'm not running. Not ever. That's been done, and we still have the war. I'm going to win it, Brother Makin. It's going to end with me. He bowed again, not so deep, but this time I felt he meant it. That's why I'll follow you, Prince. Wherever it takes us. For the moment, it took us to fishing brothers out of the mud. We got Michael first, even though Reich howled and cursed us. As the rain thinned, I could see the grey and the headcart off in the distance. The grey had the sense to keep to the road, even when Michael didn't. If Michael had led the grey into the mire, I'd have left him to sink. We pulled Reich out next. When we reached him, the mud had almost found his mouth. Nothing but his white face showed above the pool, but that didn't stop him shouting his foulness all the way. We found most of them on the road, but six got sucked down too quick, lost forever, probably getting ready to haunt the next band of travellers. I'm going back for old Gomsty, I said. We'd come away down the road, and the light had pretty much gone. Looking back, you couldn't see the gibbets. Just grey veils of rain. Out in the marsh, the dead waited. I felt their cold thoughts crawling on my skin. I didn't ask any of them to go with me. I knew none of them would. And it didn't do for a leader to ask and be told no. What you want with that old priest, Brother Jorg? Makin said. He was asking me not to go. Only he couldn't come out and say it. You still want to burn him up? Even the mud couldn't hide Reich's sudden cheer. I do, I said, but that's not why I'm getting him. And I set off back along the lichway. The rain and the darkness wrapped me. I lost the brothers waiting on the road behind. Gomst and the gibbets lay ahead. I walked in a cocoon of silence, with nothing but the soft words of the rain and the sound of my boots on the lichway. I'll tell you now, That silence almost beat me. It's the silence that scares me. It's the blank page on which I can write my own fears. The spirits of the dead have nothing on it. The dead one tried to show me hell, but it was a pale imitation of the horror I can paint on the darkness in a quiet moment. And there he hung, Father Gomst, priest to the House of Ancreth. "Father," I said, and I sketched him a bow. In truth, though, I was in no mood for play. I had me a hollow ache behind my eyes, the kind that gets people killed. He looked at me wide-eyed, as if I was a bog spirit crawled out of the mire. I went to the chain that held his cage up. "Brace yourself, Father." The sword I drew had slit old Bovid Tor not 24 hours before. Now I swung it to free a priest. The chain gave beneath its edge. They'd put some magic or some devilry in that blade. Father told me the Ancraths wielded it for 4 generations and took it from the House of All. So the steel was old before we Ancraths first laid hands upon it. Old before I stole it. The birdcage fell to the path, hard and heavy. Father Gomst cried out, and his head hit the bars, leaving a livid crosswork across his forehead. They'd bound the cage door with wire. It gave before the edge of our ancestral sword, twice stolen. I thought of Father for a moment, imaged his face, twist in outrage at the use of so high a blade for such lowly work. I have a good imagination. But putting any emotion on the rock of Father's face came hard. Gomst crawled out, stiff and weak, as the old should be. I liked that he had the grace to feel the years on his shoulders. Some the years just toughened. "Father Gomst," I said, "best hurry now, or the marsh dead may come out to scare us with their wailing and a moaning." He looked at me then, drawing back as if he'd seen a ghost, then softening.
"Jorg,"
he said, all full of compassion, brimming with it, spilling it from his eyes as if it wasn't just the rain.
"What has happened to you?"
I won't lie to you. Half of me wanted to stick the knife into him there and then. Just as with red-faced Gempt. More than half. My hand itched with the need to pull that knife. My head ached with it, as if a vice were tightening against my temples. I've been known to be contrary. When something pushes me, I shove back. Even if the one doing the pushing is me. It would have been easy to gut him then and there. Satisfying. But the need was too urgent. I felt pushed. I smiled and said, "Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned." And old Gomsty, though he was stiff from the cage and sore in every limb, bowed his head to hear my confession. I spoke into the rain, low and quiet. Loud enough for Father Gomst, though, and loud enough for the dead who haunted the marsh about us. I told of the things I'd done. I told of the things I would do. In a soft voice, I told my plans to all with ears to hear. The dead left us then.
"You're the devil!"
Father Gomst took a step back and clutched the cross at his neck.
"If that's what it takes."
I didn't dispute him. "But I've confessed, and you must forgive me."
"Abomination!"
The word escaped him in a slow breath.
"And more besides," I agreed.
"Now forgive me." Father Gomst found his wits at last, but still he held back.
"What do you want with me, Lucifer?"
"A fair question."
"I want to win," I said.
He shook his head at that, so I explained.
"Some men I can bind with who I am. Some I can bind with where I'm going. Others need to know who walks with me. I've given you my confession. I repent. Now God walks with me, and you're the priest who will tell the faithful that I am his warrior, his instrument, the sword of the Almighty."
A silence stood between us, measured in heartbeats.
ego te absolvo.
Father Gomst got the words past trembling lips. We walked back along the path then, and reached the others by and by. Makin had them lined up and ready, waiting in the dark with a single torch and the hooded lantern hung up on the headcart.
Captain Bortha, I said to Makin, time we set off. We got a ways before us till we reach the horse coast.
And the priest? He asked.
Perhaps we'll detour past the tall castle and drop him off.
My headache bit hard. Maybe it was something to do with having an old ghost haunt its way through to the very marrows of my bones. But today my headaches felt more like somebody prodding me with a stick, herding me along. It was really beginning to fuck me off.
I think we will call in at the tall castle. I ground my teeth together against the daggers in my head. And old Gomsty here over in person. I'm sure my father has been worried about me.
Reich and Michael gave me stupid stares. Fat Burlow and Red Kent swapped glances. The Nuban rolled his eyes and made his wards. I looked at Makin, tall, broad in the shoulder, black hair plastered down by the rain. He's my knight, I thought. Gomst is my bishop. The tall castle, my rook. Then I thought of father. I needed a king. You can't play the game without a king. I thought of father, and it felt good. After the dead one, I'd begun to wonder. The dead one showed me his hell, and I had laughed at it. But now I thought of father, and it felt good to know I could still feel fear.
Chapter 7.
We rode through the night and the lichway brought us from the marsh. Dawn found us at Norwood, drear and grey. The town lay in ruin. Its ashes still held the acrid ghost of smoke that lingers when the fire is gone.
The Count of Renar, said Makin at my side. He grows bold to attack Ancrath Protectorate so openly.
He shed the road speak like a cloth.
How can we know who wrought such wickedness?
Father Gomst asked, his face as grey as his beard.
Perhaps Baron Kennick's men raided down the lichway. It was Kennick's men who caged me on the gibbet.
The brothers spread out among the ruins. Reich elbowed Fat Burlow aside and vanished into the first building, which was nothing but a roofless shell of stone.
Shit poor bog farmers! Just like Fekin Mabberton!
The violence of his search drowned out any further complaint. I remembered Norwood on Fate Day, hung with ribbons. Mother walked with the Burgermeister. William and I had treacle apples.
But these were my shit poor bog farmers, I said.
I turned to look at old Gomsty. There are no bodies.
This is Count Renner's work.
Makin nodded.
We'll find the pyre in the fields to the west. Renner burns them all together, the living and the dead.
Gomst crossed himself and muttered a prayer. War is a thing of beauty, as I've said before, and those who say otherwise are losing. I put a smile on, though it didn't fit me.
Brother Makin, it seems the Count has made a move. It behoves us, as fellow soldiers, to appreciate his artistry.
Have yourself a ride around. I want to know how he played his game.
Renar. First Father Gomst, now Renar. As though the spirit in the mire had turned a key, and the ghosts of my past were marching through one by one.
Makin gave a nod and cantered off. Not into town, but out along the stream, following it up to the thickets beyond the market field.
Father Gomst,
I said in my most polite court voice,
pray tell, where were you when Baron Kennick's men found you?
It made no sense that our family priest should be taken on a raid.
The hamlet of Jessop, my prince,
Gomst replied, wary and looking anywhere but at me.
Should we not ride on? We'll be safe in the homelands. The raids won't reach past Hanton.
True, I thought. So why would you come out into danger?
The hamlet of Jessop.
Can't say I've ever heard of it, Father Gomst, I said, still nice as nice.
Which means it won't be much more than 3 huts and a pig.
Reich stormed out of the house, blacker than the Nuban with all the ash on him, and spitting mad. He made for the next doorway.
Burlo, you fat bastard! You set me up!
If little Reiki couldn't find himself some loot, then somebody else would pay. Always. Gomst looked glad of the diversion, but I drew his attention back.
Father Gomst, you were telling me about Jessop.
I took the reins from his hands.
A bog town, my prince. A nothing. A place where they cut peat for the protectorate. 17 huts and perhaps a few more pigs.
He tried a laugh, but it came out too sharp and nervy.
So you journeyed there to offer absolution to the poor?
I held his eye.
Well, out past Hanton, out to the edge of the marsh, out into danger, I said.
You're a very holy man, Father. He bowed his head at that. Jessop. The name rang a bell. A bell with a deep voice, slow and solemn. Send not to ask for whom the bell tolls.
Jessop is where the marsh tide takes the dead, I said.
I saw the words on the mouth of old Tutor Lundist as I spoke them. I saw the map behind him, pinned to the study wall. Currents marked in black ink. It's a slow current, but sure. The marsh keeps her secrets, but not forever. And Jessop is where she tells them.
That big man, Reich, he's strangling the fat one.
Father Gomst nodded toward the town.
My father sent you to look at the dead.
I didn't let Gomst divert me with small talk.
Because you'd recognize me.
Gomst's mouth framed a no, but every other muscle in him said yes. You'd think priests would be better liars, what with their job and all.
He's still looking for me, after 4 years.
4 weeks would have surprised me. Gomst edged back in his saddle. He spread his hands helplessly.
The queen is heavy with child. Sages tells the king it will be a boy. I had to confirm the succession.
Ah, the succession. That sounded more like the father I knew. And the queen? Now that put an edge on the day.
Sages? I asked.
A heathen bone picker, newly come to court.
Gomst spat the words as if they tasted sour. The pause grew into a silence.
Reich,
I said. Not a shout, but loud enough to reach him.
Put Fat Burlo down, or I'll have to kill you.
Reich let go, and Burlo hit the ground like the 300-pound lump of lard that he was. I guess that of the two, Burlo looked slightly more purple in the face, but only a little. Reich came towards us with his hand out before him, twisting as though he'd already had them round my neck.
You!
No sign of Makin, and Father Gomst would be as useful as a fart in the wind against little Reiki with a rage on him.
You! Where's the fucking gold you promised us?
A score of heads popped out of windows and doors at that. Even Fat Burlo looked up, sucking in a breath, as if it came through a straw. I let my hand slip from the pommel of my sword. It doesn't do to sacrifice too many pawns. Reich had only 12 yards to go. I swung off Jared's saddle and patted his nose, my back to the town.
There's more than one kind of gold in Norwood, I said.
Loud enough, but not too loud. Then I turned and walked past Reich. I didn't look at him. Give a man like Reich a moment, and he'll take it.
Don't you be telling me about no farmer's daughters this time, you little bastard!
He followed me roaring, but I'd let the heat out of him. He just had wind and noise now.
That fecker of a count staked them all out to burn already!
I made for Midway Street, leading up to the Burgermeister's house from the market field. As we passed him, Brother Gaines looked up from the cook fire he'd started. He clambered to his feet to follow and watch the fun. the grain store town.